J.K. Rowling said, quote, "There comes a point where Susan is lost in Narnia because she found sex."
Philip Pullman said, "The Chronicles of Narnia are monumentally disparaging of girls and women." So I figured, you know, as I was thinking about a topic for this week, at the time of this recording, it's not Thanksgiving yet. It'll be on the other side. It'll be over by the time this gets posted. But so I'm going, okay, you know, we're winding down for the holidays. Let's come up with a really easy, laid back topic that's not too serious and not too controversial.
Not at all.
Just something really, really simple here. And I went, oh, we haven't done a podcast on Susan. And that should take about 3 or 4 minutes. And then we can just talk about Thanksgiving food after that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay. Let's get this show rolling. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Rillian, for the Narnia Web podcast, Talking Beasts. And today we have... Let's do take two. Yeah, sure. I thought you were correcting me on what it was called. I was like, it is called Talking Beasts.
Yes, it is. Sorry.
Okay, I hear. I'll just go ahead and change it. Will that make you feel better, Glenfuddle?
Sure.
I'll just change everything. Okay.
Sure.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Beasts, and I am your host, Rillian.
Today I'm Glenfuddle.
Sorry. You just need to learn to be patient. You need to learn to be patient and let other people talk. I was going to say.
I know. I went for a run. I just went for a run and had some caffeine. Ready to get going. I'm editing this thing.
Today we have Jim Fan. Jim Fan, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you are so welcome. It's my pleasure.
For waiting your turn.
And we also have someone named Glenfuddle. Glenfuddle, how are you?
Am I allowed to say I'm doing well?
No, you're not.
I'm doing okay. I just went for a run and then had a little bit of caffeine shortly after. So I guess I'm just feeling my heart pumping right now. I'm ready to get going on some controversy.
No, seriously, we haven't discussed this yet on the podcast, which is amazing because we've talked about almost
everything.
Yeah. Like, what haven't we talked about?
Because it's in the last book, you know, and we tend to focus around the movies,
I guess.
It is in
the last book.
So
it is in the last book. Mm-hmm. And specifically what we're talking about is there's a discussion where Tyrion meets the Friends of Narnia, and basically...
Tyrion's just finished fighting the last king of Narnia has just finished fighting the last battle of Narnia, and he's jumped into the stable, and Tash showed up, and now Tash is gone, and he turns, and the seven friends of Narnia are there, but notably someone missing, he realizes.
I'll just go ahead and read it. "Sire," said Tyrion, when he had greeted all these, "if I read the chronicle aright, there should be another. Has not your majesty two sisters? Where is Queen Susan?" "My sister Susan," answered Peter shortly and gravely, "is no longer a friend of Narnia." "Yes," said Eustace, "and whenever you've tried to get her to come and talk about Narnia or do anything about Narnia, she says, 'What wonderful memories you have. Fancy you're still thinking about all those funny games we used to play when we were children.'" "Oh, Susan," said Jill, "she's interested in nothing nowadays except nylons and lipstick and invitations. She always was a jolly sight too keen on being grown up." "Grown up indeed," said Lady Polly. "I wish she would grow up. She wasted all her school time wanting to be the age she is now, and she'll waste all the rest of her life trying to stay that age. Her whole idea is to race on to the silliest time of one's life as quick as she can, and then stop there as long as she can." "Well, don't let's talk about that now," said Peter.
Even now, I'm thinking you're going to go on a little bit longer. Like, wait, what? Go back and explain.
That's it. That's it.
That's all we get.
That one paragraph is... well, apparently, full of controversy. Or controversy, depending on where you live. So, Jim Fan, you mentioned before the podcast, you talked about your gut reaction. What was your gut reaction? And then Glenfuddle will get yours. Do you remember your gut reaction when you first read this?
Oh, I don't. I feel like I knew that Susan... I'm trying to remember, because when I first read The Chronicles of Narnia, I was 15. So I had, like, heard bits and pieces about the books before I had ever read them. I feel like I had known before I read the book for myself But I don't remember exactly. I don't remember being, like, very shocked. I think I was just like, okay.
How about you, Glumpuddle? What was your gut reaction?
I don't know if I was shocked. I was definitely confused because of the way the story stops for a second, I guess, and Lewis kind of explains it, and then it goes on, and there's no mention of it ever again. And the rest of the book is just, you know, going through the real Narnia and further up and further in and all that stuff. So it's one of those things where it's like, wait, what? Really? Like, talk about that more. And then he doesn't come back to it, so you kind of forget about it. And then later when the book's over, you go, wait a second, he never came back to that. What happened with Susan? So it definitely made me, it's probably one of the things that made me want to go back and read the series again, actually, and kind of go explore again and see, like, was there something I missed? I felt like there was something of value here that maybe I missed. And so in a way, I guess I wouldn't say I had a positive reaction to it initially. I thought it was kind of random, and I thought it was interesting, but it was a little bit, maybe it could have been set up a little bit better, and I still kind of feel that way to some extent, as I'll talk about probably, but it is one of the things I think that made me want to go back and read the series again. And now here I am on a podcast about Chronicles of Narnia. So I guess I owe a lot to this scene.
Real quick, how old were both of you roughly, do you think, when you
was 13.
Read this part? 13?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, when I first read the books?
Yeah, when you first read this part.
Oh, it's 15. I read all the books within like a week.
See, I think I was 8 or 9. When I was at this part, and I think my first thought was, I think I was kind of surprised because, you know, what? You can imagine kind of a 9-year-old kid, what? Susan's not there? She's not a friend of Narnia anymore? And I think the other part was sadness, thinking it was kind of like a loss of a character, not a, like a death, but like a weird, like almost betrayal. Quite, but that's what it almost felt like. So that was kind of my gut reaction. I mean, there's, to a certain extent, there's so much here. Why do you think, okay, first off, this is kind of controversial on, I don't want to be oversimplistic, but on at least a couple levels. One, I think within a lot of fan circles, it's kind of controversial, maybe not for the same reasons. It's controversial with maybe other authors, and we can get into that later. But why do you think this is kind of controversial on the fan portion? My first thought is, I think that part of it is, I think a lot of people, they're always, sometimes, you know, people talk about, you know, themes of Narnia, and Michael Ward has written about this, and without getting into a tangent, one thing he says is, you know, a lot of times people have read the Chronicles and they think, ah, I discovered the secret. You know, Aslan is Jesus, and boom, that's the, you know, that unlocks the whole key to Narnia. And so I think a lot of times people are looking into, well, what is C.S. Lewis saying about Christian theology, and what is he saying about this or that?
Yeah.
That's all they're looking at. And so I think a lot of times it goes into this argument within a lot of Christian circles of, well, can you be saved and then lose your salvation, or are you not really saved? And
yeah,
and what does that mean to be saved? Or is like, if you're going to heaven, can you then change course? And I think that that's part of it. I don't actually think that's really what Lewis was getting at, except on maybe a much more simple level, a more fundamental level rather. But I think that that's part of it, is people are attaching their own positions in this, and maybe they are arguing, saying, well, this backs up what I think about this other thing, and or maybe I don't, but they're trying to rationalize it and maybe make it into something it's not. That's why I think it's kind of controversial in some fan circles.
Yeah, I think you're right about people kind of latching onto that aspect of the Chronicles, and it kind of they kind of start from there, which Lewis himself didn't start from there when he was writing them. So that kind of they read all the books through those kind of glasses, and as their starting point, when I think it makes a lot, when you have to read this as a story first and foremost. And I think a lot of and they're trying to, I think people get too caught up in what is Lewis saying by this, and they forget, well, before we can see what he's saying, if saying anything, we have to read it as a story first and let us affect us that way first. And not do it in reverse, which I think is what happens a lot. So I think you're on the right track there. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding has resulted from people trying to view it that way first.
Yeah. I think definitely you have to see, like, does this fit within the context of the books as a whole? Like, is this, like, something that's, like, just super random and super sudden? Or if you go back and read the books, like, do you see things in her character that would make this not super surprising? So, like, just from a simple, just plot perspective. Like, just, like, talk about that first. And then if you want, then you can get into, like, okay, what is there an allegory here? Like, what's the connection? But you can't, you know, take either out of too much out of balance, I guess.
I guess I think you certainly can. I don't think anybody who's reading the books is going, oh, I think Susan's not, I think she's going to stop believing in Narnia eventually. I don't think anyone does that. But, you know, in retrospect, you can look back and see what she did in Prince Caspian when she was the last one to see Aslan. And she said, you know, I really did think it was him, and I could have seen him if I wanted to, but I didn't. Or she said something like that. So you can see, oh, where maybe some of the clues were in there. Maybe Blue has had some sense. I mean, you know, he didn't plan out the whole series in advance, but maybe he had some sense in the back of his mind that there was something going on there with Susan. So I wouldn't say it comes completely out of nowhere in that you can see the roots of it, but it comes out of nowhere in that, like, no one could ever have guessed it. And it does feel a little bit random to me. Like, it could have been...
It doesn't fly in the face of who she is, but it's not something you could predict.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I will just go ahead and come out and say I do think Lewis could have done a better job setting it up. Maybe hinting at, maybe even earlier in the last battle, have Eustace or Jill say something about Susan, where you're like, wait, what do they mean by that? So we're asking the question, what's going on with Susan? So that when this lands, it's a payoff to something that was kind of set up earlier. I think Lewis could have done a little better job with this.
It is really short. It's very short. Yeah. That's it. And then it's a major, it's kind of a, as far as the stories are concerned, it's a conclusion to a story arc for a major uh-huh. character.
And it's just important to, I mean, like I said, it made me want to go back and reread. One of the things that made me want to go back and reread the books again. And one of the things I see, again, when I say read it as a story, first and foremost, okay, so context, what's happening in the last battle? And what's happening the whole last third of the final book in the Chronicles of Narnia is all about what lasts forever and what has lasting value, and kind of, and comparing the real thing to the artificial thing. Real Narnia versus the thing that just reminded us of Narnia. And there's this question earlier in the book about, you know, oh, yes, you know, all worlds come to an end. And Jill says, oh, I hope this one doesn't come to an end. We're like, no, it will. Nothing lasts forever kind of thing. And that's kind of the theme of the whole last third of the last battle. And that's what's happening with Susan, is that she's fixated on what they say. Let me pull it up here. Nylons and lipstick and invitations. And so things that feel very shallow. And as and not that those things in and of themselves are bad, but the way... she's obsessed with appearing grown up and like she knows so much better. And the way Polly puts it, she says, I wish she would grow up. She wasted all her school time wanting to be the age she is now, and she'll waste all the rest of her life trying to stay that age. So talking about how temporary life is and this problem of things that don't last forever and don't have can't have eternal value because of that, because they don't last forever. So Susan is fixated on this very small portion of her life, basically. It's not that those things are bad. There's other examples. Earlier in the book, just a few paragraphs, I think, before this, you know, Tyrion finds himself in these new clothes all of a sudden. And Lewis says something about how, oh, in Narnia, clothes that look good also feel good, too. And there's other examples throughout the series where, that's sort of, oh, you know you're in paradise because we have the clothes here feel really good. So certainly, Lewis isn't saying that nylons and lipstick and invitations are bad. The problem is that Susan is so fixated on them. She's doing so at the expense of everything else. Maybe she's going to wake up soon and realize, wow, it doesn't, when you come right down to it, it doesn't really matter in the long run.
Yeah. And I think that's definitely not a, it's all about having balance, and it's definitely not a unique issue. I mean, you don't have to look much further than, like, nowadays, like, you know, the social media age where everyone is all about trying to get their validation and just, like, build their lives around things that are as simple as, like, a like on Facebook or a like on Instagram. Like, that's not even real. Like, that's all
nylon and lipstick and likes and shares and comments.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is not new and this is not old. This has been ever since people have been around. I think there's been people who have just kind of gotten their priorities out of whack a little bit.
And it is interesting because, again, just to look at, and you guys are, I love that you're basically forming your conclusions from the text, because it's easy to just take something like this and just build up all these ideas, and then you're forming your opinions off of ideas that aren't really tied to the text. But I mean, what is the issue? So he says she's no longer a friend of Narnia, and then he doesn't really elaborate. Eustace says basically she's first of all forgotten that it was real.
What she says, at least, yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So she says that they're just basically funny games that she used to play. And Jill says, you know, she's interested in nothing except nylons and lipstick and invitations. And then, of course, there's, you know, the focus, how she's so wanting to be grown up. And now she's kind of picked this idol in her life of this kind of weird age that she thinks, well, this is what it means. I'm going to try to stay this age. And this is kind of projections from the other characters onto her. Uh-huh. But it's interesting because it's really not, I don't really think it's that controversial, because it is her picking out things that are so important to her. And now I think sometimes people kind of cast aside, well, this must really be a representation of adulthood or sex or something that, you know, why would Lewis denigrate that? But no, it is, like you pointed out,
This absolutely gets called sexist all the time. That's
it does. Mm-hmm. It does.
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with sexism. It just has more to do with shallowness a little bit. Like, anybody can be that way.
Exactly. Well, and there are so many things that we do attach so much importance to. Even to look at like Facebook and people, they've done studies on people and how they respond to Facebook likes and how, oh my goodness, I got some likes. I wonder how many more likes I can get. I wonder how many more shares I can get. And all these things that people actually become very emotionally invested in.
It's nothing wrong with wanting to get likes on Facebook, but there's a point where it becomes too much.
And it's a matter of balance and priorities, but that is her focus. And I like that. It's interesting that invitations are right there too, which is interesting. I don't remember other authors.
Friend requests.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I don't remember other authors, when they talk about this, talking about the invitations part. They talk about the nylon and the lipstick part.
Like J.K. Rowling, you mean?
Yeah, J.K. Rowling. In fact, let me find her quote here. J.K. Rowling said, quote, "There comes a point where Susan, who was the older girl, is lost in Narnia because she becomes interested in lipstick. She's become irreligious basically because she found sex. I have a big problem with that," unquote.
So first off, there's a few misunderstandings about Susan. First off, at the end of the last battle, Susan's not dead. We don't know what's going to happen to her. It's not it's not that she's, you know, gone to hell or anything, which is what, you know, Philip Pullman seems to think. Who wrote The Golden Compass, said that the Chronicles of Narnia are monumentally disparaging of girls and women. One girl was sent to hell because she was getting interested in clothes and boys. So first off, she wasn't sent to hell. She's not dead, and we don't know what's going to happen to her. We don't know if she'll ever make it to Aslan's country.
Yeah.
Second, she's not being sent anywhere. They try to get her to talk about Narnia, and she herself chooses not. She doesn't want to talk about it. She doesn't want anything to do with it. I think if you read a lot of criticism of this scene, I think I can imagine someone who has never read the book, but they read some criticism of this scene, like Philip Pullman's, they would have this image in their head of Susan comes to the door of Aslan's country, and Aslan says, "No, Susan, you are too interested in nylons and lipstick and sex. You cannot enter Aslan's country." And then Susan walks away and she falls into a pit screaming, "No, Aslan, no!" That's not what happens. What happens here is they're saying, come on, they want to talk about Narnia. They want her to be a part of this, and she is choosing not to. She's too fixated on other things.
It's like the line from The Magician's Nephew where Aslan says, people always get what they want. They don't always like it. And Susan is getting what she wants.
It's nice for a while, but then you realize, did it really, really matter, though? Did
it
really matter?
It doesn't really mean anything.
Mm-hmm. I just turned 30 this year, and so I've been kind of having... pre-midlife crisis thoughts. No, but I think about this stuff recently. I'm like, what is actually going to matter? You know, like in another 30 years from now, what am I going to look back on and say, yeah, I'm really glad I spent my time on that. That mattered. Or am I going to be looking back and going, gosh, I spent so much time on things, you know, like Narnia podcasts that didn't matter. I'm just kidding. I think this is a really important conversation we're having.
Yeah. I just got to cut in there and I got to say, I love that this is a topic that we, if not on purpose, but for some reason we haven't addressed till now, because I'm wondering what that conversation would have been like 10 years ago when we first were doing them. I don't know. Maybe it would have been a little bit different. I don't know.
I think this scene does mean a little bit more to me now, having gotten older, and asking these questions like, what's really going to matter in my life? And you know, and I went through my, you know, teen years. We're just talking about this recently with Sonarni Weber, is about how, wow, I miss being so passionate when I was a teenager. You know, you get so into things, and then later you sort of realize, not all of it, but some of it was like, why did that was that wasn't there? Should I really have spent that much time and energy on that thing?
Well, it's kind of funny because you jokingly refer to this podcast, and you know, now that I'm also 30, I have a wife, I have a son, and it does change your perspective on life. And on one hand, you know, it's kind of funny because I can think, first of all, I care about my friends and I care about you guys. So there is something beyond, there's much more beyond the podcast than that. But you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, you talk about what lasts and what doesn't. If you took the podcast away, you know, we would just talk on the phone as friends. Yeah. And so the friendship endures. And honestly, like the podcast in and of itself, it's fun. You put energy into it and it's enjoyable. But it's also, we all have so many things in life that we understand are so much more important. And that really, I mean, I spend some time thinking about the next Narnia film and then Narnia books and things. But it's, you know, life is so much bigger. But you can become focused and just zoned in on just one thing, where you just isolate other things emotionally.
Yeah. What we're saying is, it's not just, Susan's not the only person who can get her priorities out of whack. Sometimes we do too, but we don't really realize it.
But Narnia Web is still good and we need more subscribers, so please subscribe. Yes.
No, I think this is a really important conversation we're having.
Yeah, and Glopital, go ahead and read the quote from C.S. Lewis, if you don't mind, where he talks about Susan.
C.S. Lewis actually, a lot of people wrote to Lewis asking about this. And one of the things he said is, C.S. Lewis wrote, and I quote, "The books don't tell us what happened to Susan. She is left alive in this world at the end, having by then turned into a rather silly, conceited young woman. But there is plenty of time for her to mend, and perhaps she will get to Ascend Country in the end in her own way." I often think of one of the things I noticed when I this is kind of one of the scenes that kind of made me want to reread the series. And one of the things I noticed is the opening dedication to Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where Lewis talks about his goddaughter Lucy and how, you're too old for fairy tales now, but maybe someday you'll be old enough to start reading fairy tales again. And I read that and kind of went, I hope that's Susan. I hope Susan will one day be old enough to start reading fairy tales again, essentially. And that's one of the themes of, kind of the little themes throughout the series is growing up and the positive and negative aspects of it. And this scene often gets criticized. The series as a whole often gets criticized for, they're just saying that growing up is bad. And this scene here too is sort of like, Susan's just growing up and she's just maturing. You know, why is she, why is she like not allowed into Aslan's country for that? Again, it's not that she's not allowed, it's that she chooses not to be. But in this, if you just keep reading for a second, Polly actually says, you know, I wish she would grow up. The point is that Lewis would say she's not actually growing up here. Growing up would be to not be fixating on these things that don't have lasting value and be able to give them their proper place. So Lewis would say the problem is that she's not growing up here.
Lewis said, quote, "Critics who treat, quote, adult, unquote, as a term of approval, instead of as a merely descriptive term, cannot be adult themselves. When I was 10, I read fairy tales in secret, and I would have been ashamed if I had been found doing so. Now that I am 50, I read them openly. When I became a man, I put away childish things, including the fear of childishness and the desire to be very grown up."
Boom. That is like my life quote.
Yeah.
It really does inform this text, because even, I think, again, people they I think, again, we like to dissect and deconstruct and think, oh, well, this is what was really going on. And sometimes we can't see the forest for the trees. And people think, well, she must not have really just been, you know, interested in nylons and invitations. That's got to be like representative of. No, what if someone actually, what if that was really all they talked about? What if that's all that really consumed them was how they looked? And
what if you've been a queen of a magical world and they wanted to talk to you about it, but all you can talk about is nylons, lipstick, and invitations? In that situation, maybe it's not the best thing to be fixated on.
Yeah, and who wouldn't find that person immature? You know, seriously, they're so so conceited, just thinking about their looks all the time.
I think a lot of it, like when I read the section about Susan, and when I also think about, you know, people who are just very concerned about, you know, wanting to appear adult, wanting to be, you know, something different than what they are. I see a person who is shaping who they are based on other people's perceived or real expectations. So, you know, like Susan, she wants to be grown up. She wants to be accepted by these people that she, you know, other adults who she feels are the people she want to be. So she is kind of changing herself in that she's choosing, you know, not to really believe in Narnia anymore because, you know, only children, you know, remember those games, you know, like adults don't do that, obviously. So I'm not going to do that. It reminds me a lot of, I guess, like you used to, or you still do, you see a lot of people who are maybe like really interested in like kind of unusual things or quote unquote nerdy things or whatever. And they feel like they almost have to apologize for it because that's not what people expect you to like, you know? So I think nowadays people are maybe a little bit more accepting of, you know, you do you and you like what you like and that's fine. But there's still definitely that pressure of, if you are into something that doesn't really, that other people don't like, then you almost feel this pressure to almost like apologize for it, you know, because that's not normal. You have the expectation of other people that you're going to be quote unquote normal.
Yeah, that's interesting. I personally never thought about it that way, but, you know, obviously there are aspects to this that Lewis intentionally left ambiguous and open to interpretation, so that's fine. But that said, I don't feel that, going back to J.K. Rowling and Philip Pullman, I don't think they're reading the story just for what it is. I think they're projecting concerns that they have onto the story. And I should be really, really clear on something here. I probably should have said this up front. The concerns that J.K. Rowling and Philip Pullman have, and many other people have, are very serious and real. There's a major problem with the way female sexuality in books and movies is so often portrayed as somehow is shameful unless it's being enjoyed by a man. There's a sense that enjoying your own sexuality is somehow not womanly. And that has major social consequences, I understand. I totally share that concern. So when J.K. Rowling and Philip Pullman read about Susan being interested in nylons and lipstick, and it's kind of presented in like, oh, as if this is a bad thing, I think they're having a knee-jerk reaction. Again, which I understand. But when read in context with the story of The Last Battle, I think it's clear that those things are, that they're not being presented as inherently bad. It's just Susan's fixation on them at the expense of everything else that's the problem. She's laser focused on a time in her life that will not last forever, to the point that she's rejecting things that will, which ties in perfectly with the end of The Last Battle, which is all about how their life in this world was just the title page, and the real story is just beginning. And Susan's still laser focused on just the title page.
I just don't think that it's being addressed. I don't think that I like how you said how this is really in keeping with the themes of The Last Battle. I really do see this is about maturity and like how Lewis viewed, like, what is adulthood? What maturity really is? What does it really mean to be an adult, to be grown up? What things come with it? What things don't? Because we have all these ideas. You know, as a kid, you look at grown-ups, like, I remember looking at kids in college thinking, oh man, those college kids, they've got their lives all sorted out.
Yeah.
They know everything. They know where they're going. They know what they're gonna do. They know all the answers. Yeah. I mean, that's how the little kids like think about grown ups, and as kids we do that where we think, oh, to be grown up. When that's not really what it is at all.
It's, I mean, like, what if in the book, instead of saying that Susan was obsessed with lipsticks and nylons, what if he had said something like, you know, she's got this new job and all she can think about is, you know, her job, and she's just obsessed with work and she doesn't want to talk, you know, she's like, why are you guys talking about Narnia? Like, that's like kids' games. You know, what if it was something like that? Would we still be having this conversation? You know?
No. I'd say probably not. I think the issue is that on the face of it, it seems like Lewis is singling out things that are often thought of as signs of female growth and maturity and presenting those as being inherently negative. Again, that's not my reading, although I'm sympathetic with people that do read it that way because I share the concerns they have about the way female sexuality is presented in media. I don't think that's what's happening here. I do think that if Lewis had written The Last Battle today, I think he would have, in the year 2017, I think he would have worded this more carefully to make it clear that he wasn't saying that those things are inherently bad, just her fixation on them. I do think that is the reading of the text that makes the most sense. I just think Lewis, as it is, I just think that if Lewis had written it today, he would have made that a little more clear.
But also, I mean, we're talking about language and vernacular and vocabulary and context that isn't, and connotations that weren't present in the 1950s, 60s when he was writing these, which, I mean, and I actually don't know what. Were any of the people who were writing letters even concerned about that part of it? Or were they concerned about, oh my goodness, what happened to Susan?
Good point. From what I've seen, no, not really. Readers at the time that wrote to Lewis seemed much more concerned about Susan's fate and whether she ever got to Ascent Country and what it meant for her character. That's where the focus seemed to be. You know, as much as I want an answer to that, of course, of what happened to Susan, and a lot of people speculated about it, you know, considering the fact that she just lost all of her family in that train wreck. What would have happened to Susan? What would her reaction have been? How would that have just totally rocked her world? There's a lot to speculate about. As much as I want an answer to that, as I've often said, I enjoy the fact that these books always give the sense that the world of Narnia is bigger than what's on the page. Susan as a person has apparently continued to develop off screen, if you will, between the time of Prince Caspian and The Last Battle, even though only a few of those beats appear in the book. And I think it's very effective how Lewis often just gives the reader glimpses in their peripheral vision of other stories that are going on. And this is one of them. It makes the world seem bigger. So even though although in this particular case, I do think it would have been better if Lewis had given us a little bit more, at least a little bit more setup and at least a little bit more payoff to for a big character like Susan. Overall, I think this not having to explain everything, like this is something that is reflective of something I overall love about the Chronicles of Narnia. It makes the world seem very big and very real. And, you know, leaving some of those blank spots, it gives us more to speculate about.
Because what would we be without controversial things to talk about?
Well, now it is time. Okay, first of all, everyone needs to know, for the record, I think when Glenpuddle said, oh yeah, I'm going to be stumped today, he said, and I quote, do your worst, unquote.
I did, in fact, say that. Careful what you ask for.
Are you ready, Glenpuddle?
Standing by.
In The Magician's Nephew, the first king of Narnia is named Frank. How many generations of kings share the same name?
So basically, how many King Franks were there?
Yeah, how many King Franks were there?
So let's see. So this is a timeline question. It's not actually, the information's not actually in The Magician's Nephew. I guess I'm pretty sure. Do I want to wound my pride and look it up, or do I just want to take a shot? I'm thinking I'm just going to take a shot here. I feel like there weren't that many. There were 10 Caspians, of course. I don't feel like there were that many Franks. I think there were definitely less than that. I don't feel like there were a lot. Okay, so how many King Franks were there? I am going to go ahead and just take a guess here. I don't think there were that many. I'm going to go ahead and go with 3.
3 is your final answer?
Yes, 3 is my final answer.
The answer, sir, is 5. You are incorrect.
Ah, off by 2.
Lewis's Timeline of Narnian History tells us that King Frank V, the father of Cole, was the one who became the first king of Arkenland.
It's a good timeline question. Listeners, if you haven't read Lewis's Timeline, it's worth Googling. Pretty interesting.
That was tough. That was a really tough one.
That question, by the way, was submitted by Joseph. If you think you can, thanks for the question, Joseph. If you think you can stump a Narniweber, please submit trivia questions to podcast@narniweb.com with stump in the subject.
Everyone, this was fun. Thank you so much.
And maybe next time we can talk about something less controversial, you know, like politics or something.